Hello, and welcome to Contact Chi. Today's episode is a Shabbat replay from our Saturday morning service on April 6th. Rabbi Stephen led a discussion about the four children of the Passover Seder. This discussion has been edited down for clarity. Take it away, Rabbi.
We start in this moment that should really be a peak experience for the Israelites. We've been given all these instructions on how to build the Mishkan. We end the book of Exodus with the construction of the Mishkan and God's presence filling it. And then we begin the book of Leviticus with instructions on what to do, right, with the space that has been created, how to offer sacrifices and what kinds of sacrifices could be offered as a way of bringing the community together and drawing close to the divine presence. And so then in this triumphal moment at the beginning of our parasha, at the beginning of our Torah portion this week, we have Aaron and his sons offering these first sacrifices. And we're told, right, they go about this very elaborate and very complicated ritual. They put the sacrifice down and a divine fire comes out and consumes the sacrifice, which I imagine must have been a very kind of deeply satisfying moment. It's like the lighting of the Olympic torch in some ways, right? Like there's like this, like it's like it's happening. It's like finally happening. And in the midst of what truly should have been a moment of celebration, then tragedy strikes, right? Aaron's sons, Nadav and Avihu, they come with something that wasn't asked of them, right? We're told it's an Esh Zara, it's a strange or alien fire, and they bring it into the Mishkan, and instead of their sacrifice being consumed by this divine fire, they themselves are consumed by it, and they die. So the rabbis have a debate about why, what's up with these two? What was the mistake they made? And there's some rabbis who say, well, they just didn't know what they were doing. They weren't listening, or they were kind of lost in the majesty of the moment. They didn't pay attention to the exact ritual. They're too excited. They were too eager. They weren't careful enough. There was maybe even a level of ignorance or either willful or not willful. Either the excitement got to them or maybe they just weren't listening when they should have been listening. But that was the mistake they made. And then there's other rabbis who are like, no, they knew exactly what they were doing. And they just purposely didn't do it the correct way. They did their own way. They rebelled. They pushed against the structure. I mean, the structure had only been given to them for like a day and they were already pushing against it. And so this was actually divine retribution for not following the directions that they've been given. And then the wake of the death of these two individuals, Moses turns to their father Aaron and says, verse 3 here, Hu asher diber Adonai lemor bikrave akadesh ve'al panei koham ekaved ve'yidom aharon. And so Moses says, this is what God meant when God said, through those who are near to me, I show myself holy and gain glory before all the people. And then Aaron was silent following that. Right. I don't know about you, but when I read these verses, I don't think that's necessarily my first instinct. I feel like my first instinct when sitting down with somebody who's just experienced tragedy is not to be like, this is how God shows God's glory, right, to all of you, right, by quoting kind of this like biblical maxim almost, right? Don't you know, right? This is how you should feel comforted in some way, right? This is how God shows God's self to the people. Moses reaches into his wisdom and tries to pull from his deep knowledge, but actually falls flat in providing comfort for Aaron, and Aaron ends up falling silent. And so, I don't know if you've been following the thread that I've been weaving here, but right, we have kind of two sons, one who might have been a bit ignorant or innocent or simple in their approach to offering sacrifices. We maybe have another son who was rebellious, pushing against the structures that were given to him. We have somebody who, in a moment of tragedy, draws from his deep wisdom to offer some comfort. And then we have the individual who's silent. And if this sounds, does this sound familiar to anybody, right? Are you picking up what I'm putting down here? Great. Okay.
I'm going to,
right? In the Passover Seder, in the Haggadah, in the book that we use to guide our meal, we have four children that are presented to us. We have the wise child, we have the rebellious child, we have the innocent or simple or ignorant child, and then we have the one who doesn't even know how to ask. And so I want us to actually take a look. We're going to look at some text together today. And I want us to take a look at this text, and then we're going to use it as a way of opening up discussion with each other on how we're going to approach our Seder this year. So if I could have folks who may just grab. Okay, so as these texts are being passed out, we're going to start on the first side where it says the four children at the top. So don't look at the other side yet. No spoilers. So we're on the side with the four children. I will read this text just because I have the microphone, so people can hear. So our Haggadah says, "Keneged arba'a avanim dibra Torah, echad chacham ve'echad rasha ve'echad tam ve'echad she'eno yodeh lishol." The Torah speaks about four children: one who we call wise, one who's deemed rebellious, one who's deemed innocent, and one who doesn't even know how to ask. And so then the Haggadah has us go through each child and ask, well, what does the wise one say? And the wise one says, "What are these testimonies and statutes and laws that God commanded you?" And you'll explain a detail of the Seder to them, such as, "We may not enjoy an afikoman," aka the dessert, "after eating the Passover sacrifice." Right, so wise child pulls from, actually the wise child here is actually quoting a verse of Torah and then is getting a piece of Mishnah, a piece of rabbinic text answered back to them. And the Rasha, Mahu Omer, what does the rebellious one say? "What does this worship mean to you and not to me? And since they exclude themselves from our community, you will blunt their teeth," kind of like you'll like stick it to them, "by saying, it is for this that God brought me out of Egypt, for me and not for you. If they had been there, they may not have been saved." And then the simple one, the Tom, the innocent one, what do they say? "What is this?" That's a pretty innocent question, right? And you'll say to them, "With a mighty hand, God brought us out of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. V'she'eno yodeh lish'ol at petach lo." And for the one who doesn't know how to ask, you will open their curiosity by telling our story, as it says in the Torah. You will speak to your child on that day saying, "It is for this that God brought me out of Egypt." So if you notice a pattern here, right, the three children who begin this section of the Haggadah are actually setting us up in a way, right? They're each responding in some way to pique our curiosity, to get us to ask questions about what we're doing in that moment, which, to be honest, is really weird, right? I don't know if you, I'm assuming you all have dinner regularly, right? Our Seder is not like a normal dinner, right? And the whole point of the Seder in some ways is to get us to be like the children and ask questions like, why are we doing this? What's the meaning of this? Like, why are we doing this technicality? Like, why are we doing this thing that I don't enjoy right now or that doesn't feel right? Or what even is this? Because in a way, we're supposed to be responding to the child who doesn't know how to ask, who doesn't even know where to start, right? These questions kind of prepare us to then tell the story of Passover, which is the whole point of the Seder itself, is to tell the story, to reenact the story, to relive the story. And so we're actually, what I don't want us to do, and this is, I'm going back to what Rabbi Lizzie challenged us to do last week, which is, we take our tradition and we have to make it new every year in a way, because it should be responding to the moment that we're in. It should be responding to us. And so I don't want us to get stuck on the questions that the children have asked for 1400 years, right?
A lot,
many years, right? These children should be alive and should be active and should be asking us wise or rebellious or innocent questions, so that we can think about, well, how are we going to be telling the Passover story this year for those of us who don't even know where to start? So we're going to use our children as a framework for some discussion. If you want to flip your page over, we have the wise child, we have the rebellious child, and we have the innocent child. And I just proposed some potential questions that those children might ask us this year, given everything that's happening in the world, given our modern context, given our distance from the historical moment of the Exodus. But you can also fill in your own questions. But essentially the idea of, like, what are the technicalities of the Seder that we can shape or reuse in a way to tell a story in a different way? or what's even the reason we're doing this, folks? Like, why are you wasting your time doing this meal if it doesn't actually mean anything to you? Mm. So how do we make it meaningful, right? How do we actually blunt that kind of sharpness, the rebellious child who's asking good questions? And then the innocent child of like, what even is this? What should we be feeling? Why are we doing this? Like, those are actually big questions that we should be asking ourselves. So I would love for you to turn to Chavruta or even a group, maybe pick a child or two. You can use the questions that are on the page. You can also read one of the questions and be like, oh God, no, I'm not touching that right now. But like, maybe take that with you later to ask yourself and have a discussion about, well, how do we respond to this moment? What are you going to do differently this year to make the Seder new? To make the story of telling the Exodus actually be a live reenactment in real time of what it means to journey from slavery to freedom. And we'll come back together and maybe share some of our thoughts. Mm. Sound good? Awesome. Okay, I'm gonna leave you to it. Okay, I would love to hear from a person or two just some thoughts that came up for you. Who feels like they hit on something inspired or interesting or controversial or I don't know, something that moved you, something that sparked joy in the in the words of Marie Kondo. It means like literally the term in Japanese means like something that like moved you, that elicited a strong emotion, right? Of which like joy could be one of them, but like, yeah, what is something that like moved you that caused that shiver of energy? And excitement. You're all talking, so I know you're talking about something.
Well, something that was said here was like, oh God, I've been putting off thinking about this. And that's something that I have heard from many people is this feeling of like, I do not know how Seder is going to go this year because like intergenerationally that like people, you know, intergenerationally, maybe older folks at the table have different opinions on some of the themes and how they apply in the world and younger folks at the table, that like there is just the presence of difference at the table about things that are very evocative and promote reactions within us and how on earth, like Seder is hard on any year, maybe how do we hold the presence of people's different opinions on how the story applies, what the symbolic meaning of it is. How do we hold that?
Absolutely. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. I know that one of our amazing Mishkanites, Aliza Becker, wrote an article about how to maybe navigate some of those differences at the table. I think we have it on our Passover page or we're going to put it on our page. So, right. Passover is in so many ways taking the particularity of our story and drawing out universal themes, right, have always been our tradition of human dignity and worth. And if you want a good retelling of the Passover story that does that, you can watch the greatest movie of all time, The Prince of Egypt.
I don't think you've ever told us about it before.
I don't think I've ever mentioned this movie ever in this space or how much I love it. But one thing I do love about this very excellent DreamWorks feature film is that they humanize all sides, right? Like Pharaoh is actually given like a motive and like a bit of hubris and like, you know, faults that we can actually relate to, right? Whom among us has not, right, felt the pressure of leadership and maybe made decisions that we aren't proud of or have been stuck between a rock and a hard place or a sea of reeds in a rock, I guess. Well, what I love is you're pointing to, I think, a hint that's in the text, and we'll wrap up here so we can continue the conversation over lunch. But it's almost like you set this up for me in such a beautiful way. But it's hinted in the text, right? The Haggadah begins with the Torah speaks about four children, but the Torah doesn't actually speak about four children. If we look at the verse that we're given about telling children about what happened for us, it says, speak to your child on that day. It's one kid, right? And so we're given that hint that we're not actually looking at four kind of essentialized personalities. We're looking at one child, each of us, really, who embodies these different voices, right? The part of us that is well-versed in or deeply immersed in or deeply connected to the traditions that we've been given, either through our inheritance or through our choice. We are also, holding a voice in us that is probably asking right now, given everything that's happening around us, like, what's the point of this? And like, is this just performative? And is this just empty? Is this empty ritual? We also have that simple or innocent voice that's asking kind of maybe some more existential questions, or really kind of the questions of like, how should I be feeling right now? Like, I mean, and then there is probably the part of us that doesn't even know where to begin, who's been putting off, right, planning the Seder for a little while, because like, where do we even begin this year? These are all voices. These are all personalities inside each of us and inside each of the people sitting at our table. And so the question that I want us to carry out of the space is, how do we renew and recreate ritual that takes each of those voices to tell the story in a new way that actually allows us to live out the commandment, which is not to simply tell the story, but tell the story as if we experienced it ourselves. And it's not necessarily a game of projecting ourselves in the past or projecting the past into the present, but recognizing how in the present we are still walking this particular journey from slavery to freedom, from a narrow place to a place of expansiveness. And so as you begin to plan your Seders, or plan on attending a Seder, or think about your Passover, I hope that you feel a renewed sense of ownership over recreating and revisiting these traditions to tell our story anew. Shabbat shalom, folks.
Shabbat Replay is a production of Mishkan Chicago. Our theme music was composed and performed by Kalman Strauss. You can always see where and when our next service will be on our calendar. There's a link in the show notes. And if you appreciated the program, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. I know you've heard it before, but it really does help. On behalf of Team Mishkan, thank you for listening.